It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay. I have figured out something today that is going to change your life.
My life.
Everybody's life. Except people who already knew it, I suppose. Oh. No. Okay. I will be more specific. It will change the lives of people who watch YouTube videos, who do not have a paid YouTube account, and who do not already know about this.
Okay.
So it's still a pretty broad range of people, of which I believe you are included.
All right.
Yes. So without paying YouTube money, you can't get them to stop showing you ads. But you can get them to stop showing you specific ads. I'm on the YouTube and it's showing me an ad, and I move the thing, or I'm doing it on the TV, and I move it, and there's the, you know, the pause button for the ad or whatever. But there's a thing over the side, it's a little info button, and you click on it, and it's like, why am I seeing this ad? And it has the option to say, don't show me this ad anymore. And so I have been doing it on basically all the ads telling me that Teresa Greenfield signed death orders for my parents or is in the mob and Bernie Sanders is too and whatever. and it just gives me ads about some SUV it wants me to buy or chicken nuggets. And I am super cool with those. But the campaign ones go away. So
that's cool.
And the options of like why you want it going away, it's like repetitive, irrelevant, inappropriate, and something else. And I'm like, those all qualify. So every time I just pick a different thing. It does appear that I have to do it for each ad, which is disappointing. I was hoping, like, you know, if I don't want one ad about how a candidate is basically the devil, I probably don't want another ad about how that same candidate is still basically the devil. But, you know, I'm getting there.
Good.
So, yeah, so that was great. I was super psyched about that. And YouTube is finally slowly getting smart enough that it's learning that the ads it needs to show me are trailers for TV shows and movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because I will often watch the whole like 3-minute thing when I could have been out in 5 seconds. Because I'm like, I wanted to see this. Yeah, I'm curious. And I realized that this could extend to like Google AdSense and shit like that. Because there's places you can be like, don't show me this ad again. So, you know, we can't get them to stop showing ads, but they very much want to show us ads that we actually like give a shit about. So right. I'm happy to train them. And the first and foremost one is do not show me a single political ad, because I will make none of my decisions ever about who I vote for and who I donate to based on a political ad of any kind.
Yep.
And also, even if I thought it was a really great ad the first time, you run them ad infinitum and I'll cry. I actually, there was one today that I left because it was for a candidate running for an office I'd never heard of. Like, I mean, I'd heard of the office, but like this candidate had never come up before.
Mm.
And I was like, ooh, a new political ad. Also found it fascinating because her whole spiel, it was her, so it wasn't a negative ad, but her whole spiel was like, Democrats and Republicans have to get along, to the degree that the ad didn't specify what party she's in, which means maybe she's third party, I don't know. But I was like, dang. If it shows up again, I'm going to kill it. But I let it run this time because I was like, something different. So, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that looks at the current news and socio-political climate throughout the world and analyzes it through the lens of 11-year-old women of color. Because that's what we're good at. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 492. Right?
Yes. And for the record, we're both middle-aged white men.
Yeah, since someone might not know that.
Well, I'm just saying that, like, this is... They're like, oh, from the perspective of 11-year-old women of color. Like, yeah, what are our credentials? Middle-aged white men. Who better?
Yeah, who better?
I mean, really.
I mean...
Other than, you know, anyone who fits any of those demographics.
I mean, middle-aged white men have been running things for centuries now. I mean...
I was thinking about this today.
Pretty much their worth.
I was thinking about this today. I think I need to run... I think I need to write a thing on this. I don't know what to do with it, but the problem with being being in a very general sense, we'll say this way, a straight white male in middle-class America with loving and supportive parents. The problem with this, which you're like, there is no problem. That's like as privileged as you can get. Yes. Therein lies the problem. There's nothing to struggle against. Like, you can't fight anything because nothing's working against you. And consequently, and I speak from experience here, even though I am an 11-year-old black girl, you want to find things to fight about. And you want to find things that, like, you can stand up for and whatever, but it's all just very easy. This popped into my head because today I had to run a couple of errands in town, and I wore one of my caftans. And as I do when I wear my caftans, two things happen. One, nobody said or remarked on it at all or gave me any weird looks or anything. And two, I imagined all sorts of, like, comments and slurs and things and how I would respond to them.
Okay.
And I find that I've done that a lot in my life. Like, man, if this happened, I would be... And I'm like, that's because it never happens to me. None of the situations ever happened to me. And so, you know, there's something that I want to, like, struggle against. But I don't... My life is such a not struggle.
Well, we have
and
talked
it's been
about
like that my whole life.
We have talked before about how privilege can really it can be a disadvantage in lots of ways. Like, one way is that, like, part of the upshot of what you're talking about is you might not realize that in given circumstances and situations, you might not realize you're not putting 100% of your effort into something. Because you don't
all
know.
All
yeah, you don't.
Time.
You have no idea that it's things are.
I'm fairly certain I've never put 100% of my effort into anything.
Well, but I'm talking about people who think they are trying to, but then after the fact maybe realize, wow, I didn't really have to try that hard to make that happen, or that failed. But in looking back, in evaluating what happened, so that I can learn from it, I realized that I did not put 100% into that. Why didn't I? What, you know, why
yeah, see,
was
that's
I...
never actually worked for me.
Because,
again, I don't know what 100% looks like in me. There's just any time I have to compete against anything or whatever, I always secretly in the back of my head assume I'm going to win. And I either do or I am absolutely blindsided.
Yeah, I don't...
When I ran for, like, student body things or whatever, I either won or I didn't win, and it, like, just blew my mind that I didn't win. And how is that even possible?
Yeah, privilege can really mess with your perceptions of things in a way that's, you know, very not good for you, obviously.
It very much reminds me of the aspiring authors and stuff like that. I mean, and it's a comedic trope. I don't know if it really happens, but the people who like lament the fact that they weren't abused as children or grew up really poor because they have nothing from which to draw for their writing.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing. I'm like, I've never been up against anything. So I don't know the struggle in the broadest possible terms. I have no concept of the struggle, sort of by any definition.
Well, there's also another aspect of it is, besides maybe not ever knowing what your potential is or what 100% effort means for you, you can also find yourself you can find yourself in situations where the worst choice is not that bad.
Read every election since the founding of the country.
Yeah. It's like, so you're telling me that I could put effort into this, or I could deal with this second or third choice, and neither of those, the second or third choice, is that bad. Yeah, I can live with it. Where is a lot, for a lot of people, the second or third choice is terrible.
Yep.
So there's not a lot of option but to really, really apply themselves and try to get that first thing.
Man, so, our sympathy for the white guy episode is really starting off well. I am pleased.
I think
that we've finally
gotten
around to this.
No. We've talked about this stuff before. The point being, the major point here being, is that the dynamics that make hierarchies and oppressors versus oppressed, nobody wins. Now, of course, the people at the top lose less than the people at the bottom, but everybody loses.
Well, and just to essentially, I think my point from it is the people at the top are super clueless.
A lot of them are, yeah.
Like every time you're like, there's no racism, I've had to struggle for that. You really have not.
Yeah.
You have, just because one morning you woke up and your gold flake pancakes were not already sitting on your bed is not the same as having to struggle to find food. Like, and I mean, I've been there, and there is this thing, because everybody around us is struggling largely against us, but like, you want to have that. There's a part of my brain. I mean, obviously when I think about it, I'm like, no, I would prefer to have everything handed to me, and it's nice. I do like that. But there's part of my brain that's like, no, that's how I prove like myself, is that I'm fighting against something. I try and fight on other people's behalfs, but you know, if we lose, I go home like, oh, damn, back to my privilege. Yeah. Like, it's not, I mean, there's just, and that's us being pretty aware, I say, not totally aware, because I would have no idea if we were, but us being pretty aware, the people who like, it's an alien concept to them, or who think that like white privilege, male privilege doesn't exist, like, they're not just being assholes. They are just being that ignorant.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then there's the component. When you see it, you get in denial about it because you're like, I like my privilege. It's handy. And I mean, I feel like I'm sure I suffer from that on subconscious levels all the time. But it's amazing how much you don't see and you think you do.
Yeah.
Anyway, that came up today. For those of you just joining us, this is a podcast where we pretend to be young black girls and then talk about how hard it is on white men. That's pretty much it. No, we have a hat. It is magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Excuse me. And people who are out there and helping us and keep it coming, good people, all the people, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat magically transmogrifies those little emails into note cards with the information written physically on them that manifest physically also within the hat itself. It's 11-year-old black girl servants, who are actually middle-aged white men, draw those note cards out of the hat at random. Read them on the air. Talk about them till we're bored. Do that for about an hour. That's the whole show except the parts that aren't, which is most of it.
So what's going on with your picture? I mean, you're so much better lit than usual.
And... I'm in the living room, which means that the light source is right there and is much brighter. That's what happens when I'm in the living room.
Okay.
Today it got hot enough. I said, fuck it. And I closed the house and I turned on the AC. But the family room is also the room that gets hottest. So I decided to record in here tonight.
Gotcha.
And just in case the bugs show up, I have my bug repellent. So, had power the whole week.
Whole week, wow.
It was awesome.
There's still a lot of people who don't, unfortunately.
Yes. Not very few still in this town, but a lot in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, is in bad shape.
Yeah, still.
And for potentially weeks to come, potentially longer. I mean, people are comparing a lot of the devastation to the 08 floods.
Floods, yeah.
Which I think is awful because, in my opinion, there are parts of Cedar Rapids that have never recovered from the 08 floods.
Yeah.
So I'm like, now it's happening again. Like that whole city may come out very different.
Which, in case people have forgotten or don't know, Cedar Rapids is a town just 30 minutes north of us. It's in the county north of us.
If you come visit, you can go see the devastation.
I just want to, you know, we're talking about it. Who, you know, they don't.
It's also a city featured in the movie Cedar Rapids, starring Ed Helms.
Is it, though? I mean, it's supposed to be in Cedar Rapids, but it's not really shot there.
The same way that Galesburg, Illinois is featured in the movie Dead Kids.
Okay, so not really.
I don't know where it was shot. I think the B-roll was shot in Cedar Rapids.
Really? I don't know.
I think I remember seeing the thing. I've seen it. I think I saw it in the theater.
I haven't seen it.
It's not a great movie. It's not terrible. It's not great. It's all right.
Wasn't it supposed to be like an insurance convention?
It was some sort of convention. I don't remember if it was insurance or what, but it's a convention. And hijinks ensue. It's a man's path to growth and or despair via work convention. Hmm. Yeah, it's not great. That's fine. Okay. Anyway, how's your week?
That's fine. I watched some stuff, did some stuff. Nothing really.
What'd you watch?
We finished Legend of Korra. We finished that.
Oh, how is that? How is that compared to Avatar? Wait, when I last talked, you hadn't finished Avatar. And now you've already finished Legend of Korra. You hadn't.
Oh.
You still had a couple episodes left, I believe.
Well, okay, so... when you go to Rotten Tomatoes and you look at the original Avatar, the Last Airbender thing, it's got like
not a the shitty movie. We're not talking about the shitty movie.
No. The
that movie was
thing.
Shitty. We'll move on.
The critic score is like 100%, and the audience score is like 99% for the original cartoon. And that both of those scores seem too good to me. I mean, it's not bad. It's not a horrible show or anything. I just don't quite know what people are seeing in it for critics to give it 100% and audiences to give it 99%.
Yeah, I mean, there's very few things I would give 100%, and it's not one of them. It's good. I recommend it, but...
Yeah, sure, but that said, The Legend of Korra, I think the critic score is in the 80... No, it's like 93, and then the audience score is like in the 70s, but this is what I think about that. If the first cartoon series deserves 199, I don't see why Legend of Korra doesn't. I mean, I don't think either of them deserve that high score, but I don't see how one deserves a much higher score than the other one.
I have heard universally in my own narrow experience, which means the occasional article online and people I know or whatever, but universally all the things I've seen say they like Korra better.
Well,
that Korra is essentially a more matured show and could be more nuanced and pointed. And
I'd say I like Korra better, but I feel like that's for personal biases and things like that. But I don't think quality.
A lot of
like,
characters with the last name Wright in it.
No.
That usually does it for you.
I don't think looking at it more objectively in terms of just the craft of each series, I don't really see how it deserves to be rated worst by critics or audiences. Now, I have seen people complain about it because, you know, they liked the original and the new one didn't, you know, meet their expectations, so to speak. They wanted to see a season, an extra season of the original, or they wanted to see, I don't know what. And to me, that doesn't count. I mean, when I read critics who don't like something because it doesn't meet their very narrow expectations or because it's not in a genre they like or whatever, those people should never be allowed to write critical reviews or be called.
But I mean,
that's not what being a critic means.
I think it's very rare, and by that I mean only with Terminator, that the sequel to something gets overall higher critique and rating scores than the original.
I'm not saying there aren't legitimate critics.
No, but I'm just saying this is always a thing. This is always a thing. If people see something, they like it. The sequel, if it's not exactly the same, a lot of people don't like it as much. Overall, you get this effect.
But when I say not meeting expectations, I mean, like, they wanted something very specific. They didn't get it, and they can't get over it. And so,
I'm saying this happens a lot.
They spend half of the review just complaining about why the people who made it didn't make this and made this thing instead. And they're like, just tell me what you think of this thing. You know, can't you judge it on its own merits? You can't get over your little hang-up?
No.
Or whatever?
They cannot.
It's really annoying.
They cannot.
But...
especially with movies and TV, it's what it means. What it means to them is what the movie or TV is.
But you know, when I was growing up,
that's all that matters.
That's not what a critic did. I mean, when I was young, I was a huge fan of Siskel and Ebert and At the Movies and stuff. I loved watching that stuff, and I thought being an art critic or a film critic, and then later. Getting to know Jazz, who is literary criticism. I love all that stuff. But when people say, I'm going to critique this, and then they don't critique it. They just complain about why this, how the studio didn't make the thing they wanted. I just find that really disappointing.
Yes, and I 100% agree with you. We've also had the exact conversation. You replace the word critique with report and the word film critic with journal or film critique with journalism. We've had this exact, it's the internet age. Suddenly when everybody got their voice out there and it wasn't just a handful of guardians with a responsibility to the people, it's a free for all now. And the people who get the more attention are the people who have the crazier opinions.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
There's a very, I forget the guy's name, but there's a very successful film critic. And he's very successful because everyone hates him because he just rips the shit out of great movies for the dumbest reason. He's a horrible person, but he maintains a lot of attention because of that fact. Basically, humans are trash.
But yeah, video games played and things like just that Cities Skylines thing.
I frequently like the AV Club reviews, although I often don't agree with them, because they tend to be very good about explaining why they felt a certain way. And so I can read their reviews and be like, okay, they really didn't like this aspect. I don't give a shit about that aspect, so I'll probably like it. Or I'll see a movie that I hated and I'll be like, how did they give it such a great score? And I read it and I'm like, they were really into this thing, which I'll admit was good, but I didn't care. This thing really bugged me. And occasionally I'll be like, why did they like it so well? And they'll read this thing and they say something great about it. And I'm like, no, it was the exact opposite of that. You're a lunatic. But for the most part, they're fairly upfront about the specific reasons for rating a movie a certain way. And I find that useful. Outside of that, I usually take critiques only in the aggregate. And even then I take them in a very broad category. Like, were the reviews overall really good? Were the reviews overall really middle? Or were the reviews overall really shit? And that's as far as I'll lay any claim to. And even then, it's wrong a lot. And then sometimes you don't listen. Sometimes the reviews are really bad and you're like, it can't be that bad. Hellboy is just a fun property and David Harbour is a great guy and Daniel Day-Kim is an incredible actor. It probably won't be great, but how bad can it be? And then you find out. It wasn't. Because it was dog shit.
There was this critic that I used to read a lot, and I liked him because, first of all, he didn't seem to... Like, I think you could tell that there were certain genres that he liked better than others, but he didn't let that... He didn't ding something because it was in a genre he didn't like. He never seemed to be bothered by it meeting any kind of expectation. I didn't always agree with him, but I understood him. And another thing was he had a 10-point scale.
Big bow tie.
He had a 10-point scale, which was really useful because once you get to understand how they use their scale, you can really understand. Well, for example, a 10 movie was pretty much only a film that he thought was worthy of like an Oscar.
Yeah.
Which meant that there were certain films that would never get a 10. But that was fine because you knew that if a rom-com got a 7, well, that was probably a good movie, right?
Yeah.
Or if if an action movie got a 7, 6 or a 7, that was actually pretty good. So, you know, a good reviewer, one that you read all the time or that actually influences your choices, is not often one that you agree with. Maybe you never agree with them, but you understand them. So you go, yes. Oh, I understand if he or she says this, it means this. And that's...
Which, again, is why I tend to like AV Club, because I have a real set. They do like a school scoring, A through F. And I have a very good sense. I have seen very few A's, and I have seen one of the A's I saw, not an A-, an actual A. They don't do an A+, but A... I saw, and not only was it an A, but there were multiple other articles people wrote about just how awesome this film was a goddamn ghost story, AKA Rooney Mara eats pie for 5 minutes. So I do not always agree with them. Although I remember reading that review and I was like, I kind of get what you're saying. I still don't agree. But in general, you don't get those. An A- means it's a really good film. If you're in the B's, it's probably worth it. C is usually what they're like, it's fine. Go watch it. And anything D+ or under, I'm just going to read the review, even if it's not a movie I was ever interested in, because they're usually hilarious. Because the D movies are like, this is a shit movie. And if you get an F, one time I just went through their back catalog and read all their F's, because their F's are basically for something that's like, this barely works as a movie. Like, you can almost not call this a movie. So those are really fun. But I found that most of the D's are pretty fun too.
AV Club, huh?
AV Club. Maybe they used to have them directly on The Onion, but that was when AV Club was part of The Onion in a different way. But yeah, I get a lot of them from there.
Well, how was your...
And they review then? Movies, they do TV, they review albums, they review video games, lots of stuff.
How was your week?
Not bad. Still getting my feet under me. Just about reclaimed the kitchen to the position it was before all the shit went down. The fridge is gorgeous. I worked my butt off on that. I spent like a day because we had to clear out the fridge and it hadn't been cleaned in many, many years. And I mean, like, I scrubbed forever. I got into the fridge and scrubbed for a while. At one point, I'm sitting in the bathtub with a shelving unit and a dish sponge and a bottle of dish soap just scrubbing because it wouldn't fit in the sink. And I'm just sitting there in it. But you could freaking eat off that fridge now. And I'm really hoping, like, now that I have control over it and know what goes in there, that I can keep it that way. So it'll be nice. But yeah, I'm still cleaning the thousands of canning jars and Tupperware containers that were hiding in the back of it that were full of really gross things. But no, in general, it's good. I'm on track for my goal this week for editing. Been doing stuff. Finally got our Wonder Woman license plate frame on the back of our car. So I'm excited about that.
That's cool, yeah.
Watched a lot of TV and movies this week. I'm still playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, but I haven't really done much for that. I am watching second season of Altered Carbon. That's still the prettiest fucking sci-fi in the world. Altered Carbon is so gorgeous. And it's really reminded me how much I love that setting. I don't necessarily love the story because it's, again, some macho noir bullshit. But the world he's created is awesome. So I am really enjoying that. I'm almost done with that. I also, so every once in a while, wandering around Amazon, I'll find like a TV series that I've never heard of that looks interesting, and I'll stick it in my queue, and then I'll never touch it again. I've got a ton of those. While I was looking around, I was like, I should have a second show because I don't like watching too many episodes of something in a row because it's harder to like keep it in your head. You need time to process. But I was like, you know, I need something else to be watching. So I found this thing that was out there. I am only 3 episodes into it, and I think it originally was a web series, but it is pretty good production value. It's called Dark Web, although technically it's called Dark/Web. I don't know if you're supposed to say it that way or not. And it's free on Amazon Prime. It's not, it's like 8 episodes. I'm having a hard time seeing what it is. It's started as essentially a horror anthology based on the modern world and like the internet and like social media and that kind of stuff. A very like modern consumer technology horror.
Okay.
But it was framed around this thing involving these like 30-year-old people getting these email messages from a high school friend of theirs who is missing. And she writes them these short stories. And the short stories are the episodes. But by the 3rd episode, the short story was kind of small. And we spent a lot of time in the frame story. And the frame story is the part I'm interested in. What's going on with that? Because it turns out there's commonalities between the stories they were sent. And they're putting together pieces. And it's a very, like, conspiracy, what's going on kind of thing. And it's interesting. And the next episode I'm very curious about because they're all meeting up at a place. And the episode's twice as long. And there's, like, no sub story named in it, so I'm not even sure we're going to get a story in this one, and it may just be about the thing, but I'm finding it interesting. It's still somewhat horror based, so if you're not into that, then don't do that. But so those are my TV shows. I watched some movies that I desperately need to talk about, a lot of them. So sometime after we got our power back, we watched a movie that Trish had wanted to see. And so I queued it up for us to watch, and she doesn't remember at all wanting to see this. I was not that interested, but she was. And I was like, hey, you know, I'll be nice to her tonight. We'll watch this thing. There, it's on Hulu, and you've been wanting to watch it. And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. But we watched it anyway. It's called Anna and the Apocalypse. And it is a holiday comedy horror musical.
Okay.
And it, I mean, they tried to make some bigger comparisons that I don't think are accurate, but it's, imagine somebody trying to make a movie where Shaun of the Dead and High School Musical were mixed together, but maybe they hadn't actually seen either of them.
Okay.
So, it's not bad. It's not great. It's a zombie apocalypse story that's kind of a comedy, and that is a musical, but it's very, like, poppy, teenager-y musical. And some of the songs are good. Not enough that I'm going to try and find the soundtrack or anything, but some of them were kind of cute. It's weird. It's a little different than what you usually get, so it's almost worth it for that. But, like, it's not even as good as the musical episode of Buffy, I wouldn't say. But, I mean, if you liked that, you might like this. I mean, it was odd, but that's not what I want to talk about. So, for years, I have been trying to find a way to watch this again without paying money for it. And I check every few months. I do search. Nope. And then, the other day, I'm wandering around Netflix for some reason I don't remember. And it's there, and it's on Netflix, which means I'm not paying money for it. I'm like, holy shit, we are watching this for date night. So we watched it last night. It's on Netflix. You should all watch it. The original Clash of the Titans.
The original, wow.
The Harry Hamlin, Roy Harryhausen, Maggie Smith when she was young, Burgess Meredith when he was, I mean, he still had facial features. He wasn't just a prune like his. And let me tell you right now, it does not hold up. But what's funny is it's not in the way you would think. So, you know, much love to Ray Harryhausen. I expected, yeah, it's old. I mean, it's 81, but let's be honest, it's a very 70s movie. It's old 70s stop motion animation. It's going to be cheesy. Yeah. It was not. It has held up really well. Every other aspect of production has not. Mm. What did you call it before they had green screens, but they were green screening, like when you'd superimpose something over something else? There's a term for it, and I forget what it was.
Oh, was there? I don't know.
Yeah.
Matting or?
Yeah, something like that. Matting is possibly what it is. There is a lot of that in this movie, and it is bad. And I don't mean bad for the time. I mean bad within a vacuum, wholly, objectively bad. They went to great lengths to try and make the entire opening credits look like there's a silhouette of a seagull on them, and they failed. Especially bad because the seagull turns into Zeus. Also, and a little bit of this is the fault of Greek myth, because so much of this is pulled from Greek myth. But the story, everything about the script feels like it was written by a child. Like, concepts of just how people interact with each other, definitely concepts of how love work, of how revenge work, like, everything about this is like, are any of you real people? Because none of it ever makes sense. They just do the dumbest things or the most random things. The people who are considered heroes are not considered, like, they're all pretty bad in different ways. And it, yeah, it's, I mean, it's hilarious. Watch it. We just be prepared to riff through it and see some really cool stop motion from Harryhausen. Yeah. Like, that part is still very cool. It's just all the rest of it. And see a really young Harry Hamlin, which is interesting because I do not think, I understand he was considered handsome at a time, but when I think of Harry Hamlin, I think of an older Harry Hamlin, I do not think of him as attractive. Clearly, that is the amount of work he's had done, because in this, he freaking looks like a young Mark Ruffalo. And as longtime listeners will know, Mark Ruffalo can absolutely get it as far as I'm concerned. Like I heart Ruffalo in a big way, like in some inappropriate ways. And Harry Hammond looks close, except he has his whole face all the time is this. His mouth is always like this. And I kept yelling at him, I'm like, close your mouth, close your mouth. And then he did for a while. And he's like, and I was like, shit, open your mouth again. Open, oh my God, open your mouth. And Perseus is a jackass. Oh my God. There is a running thing that I don't even think they meant to do, that he is gifted with these incredible magic items and he uses them when they're useful and then loses them or throws them away. And Bubo don't make sense. Bubo is also way more obviously an R2-D2 ripoff than I remembered. Like, way more obviously. Because I haven't seen this movie in decades. So check it out. It's on Netflix, so you can watch it. And it's funny as hell. But yeah, it does not hold up well. Which is too bad. Good music. Also, I feel like I should write a treatise on how Burgess Meredith's character in this movie and Burgess Meredith's character in the Rocky movies are the same character, because there's a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's still on the sidelines, like, in the corner telling him how to fight. It's weird. And then I watched a movie last night that is very interesting. I watched it on Shudder. I think you can find it a lot of places. It's a 2006 horror film that I have known about for a long time and have not watched. It is called Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon. And when I first encountered it, it describes itself as a film that's basically a fictionalized like documentary about an up-and-coming serial killer. And that did not sound like my kind of thing at all. I'm not generally into the serial killer genre. There have been versions of this kind of thing. There's like a portrait of a serial killer. Not my thing. Don't like it. But it's got a following. Like, it keeps popping up in places. And people talk like it's really good and there's some subversive shit to it. And so I keep it around on some cues and stuff. And then last night I was like, what the hell? Let's just do it. Let's just watch it. And I recommend it. And there's a couple things you need to know about it that I didn't know, which is why I took so long. First of all, it's very much a mockumentary. And it bills itself as a horror comedy. I'm not sure that's entirely fair, but it's kind of funny because it plays off of the documentary tropes dealing with this. But the big thing you need to realize is this is not, strictly speaking, about a serial killer. It's about a supernatural serial killer. It's not about the next Ted Bundy. It's about the next Jason Voorhees. In fact, they literally are talking about Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers, as though these are real things that happened. And then they meet this guy. They're contacted by this guy who's like, you can take footage and you're going to see the birth of a new one like this. It's this kid who murdered his family and was the townsfolk got together and threw him off the falls as punishment. But I survived and I am that kid now and I'm going to do the whole thing. And it's this whole thing. There's his old house and he knows when the kids are going to come and like hang out there for the night and stuff. And he's going to do the whole thing. And it's very interesting. It's kind of funny. And at a certain point, it kind of ditches the documentary feel a little bit, but it's quite meta. And I personally love films and stories and things that are like, hey, you know this weird fantastical thing that we make stories about? What would that really look like if it was real?
Yeah.
Prime example being Watchmen, the original comic. I love the original comic because it's that exact thing. It's like, you know, we got all these superhero stories. What the hell would actual superheroes in the real world look like? And I love that kind of stuff. And that's what this is. It's not what if serial killers existed. They do. But it's like, what if the shit that happens in movies like Halloween and Friday the 13th was real? How would that actually, like, what the hell's going through their minds? And it's like, yeah, you go meet this friend of his who's an old guy who is a retired, like, psycho killer. And they go and they have a barbecue and they like hang out and all this stuff. And it, and there's lots of bits where these people who are making the documentary, like, it doesn't really register for them until things start happening. Like, this is actually going to involve like killing people. And what does that mean? And there's a whole big thing about like, he's like, I'm here to tell you how we do it. I can't tell you why we do it. There's a process. You'll have to just sort of see over time and figure out why we do it. And it's interesting. It's also pretty funny in places. They got bits. He's like, so I've nailed up all the windows here. He's like, well, can't they just break them out? He's like, yeah, but when they do that, it's usually on the second floor, and then they're stuck up on the roof, and they're screwed. She's like, and they don't do it on the first floor? He's like, no, they never break them out on the first floor. I don't know why that is. And stuff like that. And all the symbolism that's involved. It gets referenced to... it gets compared with Cabin in the Woods. And I think that's fair in terms of the meta-ness and to a degree of the humor. Like, Cabin in the Woods is, you know, head and shoulders. But this is definitely still an indie sort of production. But I would recommend it if you watch slashers and horror movies and stuff. And if you're like me, I also love the mockumentary format in general.
Yeah.
But again, called Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie. I already forgot the last name. If you get that far, you'll get it. Also, Robert Englund and Zelda Rubinstein are in this movie, not playing the characters they're famous for, or playing themselves. Robert Englund, famously Freddy Krueger. Zelda Rubinstein, famously the very tiny psychic woman in the Poltergeist movies.
Oh.
That's mostly it. I'm still reading the 13th Harry Dresden book for Trish. I'm still reading Weird Sisters. At the gym, I'm listening to the 14th Harry Dresden book because I'm catching myself up again. Anyway, my niece goes back to college Sunday, so that shit's gonna go down. They're taking bets about the university and how long till they have to send all the kids home. The range so far seems to be between 2 months into the semester and 2 weeks into the semester. No one thinks it's possible it's gonna go beyond 2 months.
University of Iowa?
Yes.
Yeah.
Just such a terrible plan.
Yeah, I forgot to mention this past week. My youngest brother has a stepdaughter who started at University of Iowa this week. So he was up here. They were only allowing two people to move her in, and that was going to be her mom and her, you know, biological dad. So he needed to occupy himself for a few hours. And so we rode around town, went and saw the Black Angel in Oakland Cemetery and stuff like that. But yeah, I kind of wondered that too after, because, you know, everyone was wearing masks and everything. And I'm thinking they're being really cautious and all that. But she, you know, she's going into a dorm room with other people. So
yeah,
whoever these people are, if any of them, I don't know if they had to get tested or what. But I mean, it just seemed like a thing that's, like you said, it's going to give it a month, maybe two, and everyone's going to be sent home. It seems.
My niece's one is interesting. It's a small private college, and they're being sent back to the dorms, but they're required to do social distancing, and they're not going to have in-person classes. They're doing them online just from the dorms. And I'm like, that seems even crazier. But I am pleased. My niece is in a one-bedroom triple, or a one-room triple dorm room, but it's her two best friends, and they are very cautious. And in fact, one of them has asthma and some immunosuppression issues. So they are going to be incredibly cautious. But the university, yeah, I don't know what the fuck. That's our governor. Trish went and visited her sister. Her sister, her oldest younger sister, wanted to see her, and so she went to the Quad Cities, and they hung out like in a park a ways away from each other for lunch, which was ended up being like six hours. But they had a good time. Anyway, we should probably do a hat thing.
Yep.
Who's got it? You got it? I got it.
You've got it.
Are you sure? Look under your chair. No, I'm kidding. All right. That would be awesome, though.
That would be awesome.
If I can make that happen.
Yep.
All right. This is one from Blood Sparrow. Hello, Blood Sparrow. This is not abridged. This is just how it is.
Oh.
What is your favorite sugar-free treat? Parentheses, I can't eat sugary stuff anymore. Blood Sparrow.
Do you have an
Williams
answer
for this? Williams is kale. Williams' favorite is kale.
Well, I mean, that's what's really, I mean, treat. That's the operative word is clearly treat. So,
well, I can cheat because I am totally fine with most artificial sweeteners. I have found, sadly, that I'm really not that into stevia. But like aspartame and shit, yeah, I'm all over that. So I can have a lot of things with no sugar in them. But I mean, outside of that, that's the easy one is artificial sweetener. Outside of that, you know what a big one is for me? Nuts. I like nuts.
Yeah.
I got on a kick for a while here where I was getting roasted peanuts in the shell, unsalted. But I kind of stopped for a while because I was eating a lot of them. But I love pistachios are my favorite. I love cashews.
Yeah.
If I'm really feeling like spoiling myself, I'll spend $9 on a thing of macadamia nuts that's like this tall. Has like 4 nuts in it, but it's really good. Nuts is a big one for me. You have to watch out for things that you wouldn't think. So I was going to be like, also beef jerky. Beef jerky has a shit ton of sugar in it, often.
It can, yeah.
It's amazing what has sugar that you don't notice. Now, and I mean, I don't know what Blood Sparrow's situation is. If she's dealing with type 2 diabetes like I am, I can still have sugar. It's just a matter of how much and when and being careful. And there's a lot of other carbohydrates I have to watch out for. That it gets me in trouble there because I'll have stuff that is genuinely sugar-free, but they replaced it with like other carbohydrates that it will also fuck up my blood sugar. So sometimes just being sugar-free is not enough. But in general, avoiding processed sugar is handy overall and really handy if you're diabetic. But yeah, nuts are a very big one for me. I have this thing. I don't know if you have this thing. You probably don't have this thing. When I go out to buy things, I always want to get a treat. Whenever I go grocery shopping, there's a treat. Whenever I go fill the gas tank, I want to go inside and get myself a treat. And this is terrible. Because I mean, it's a bad habit in general, but also it means I'm eating a bunch of shit. And treats are frequently the worst. A treat is like a candy bar or whatever, and that's terrible. And so I try and fight against this premise a bit. But the other thing I do is try and change what I mean by treats. And so, like, a big one for me now is I will go and get myself a diet drink of some kind. So, like, I'll get, like, a Gatorade Zero or whatever. Or today I went and filled the gas tank and I got myself a treat in the form of a Diet A&W root beer. Also got myself a treat in the form of honey roasted cashews. But point is, I've been trying to do that more. Trish, I wanted to get her a treat at the grocery store, but she's trying to be much better. And I figured it out. And again, nuts. For a while, she was on a kick of these lightly salted Blue Diamond almonds, like lightly salted with sea salt, and they were just right for her. So I got her a bag of those because they're not bad for her. Like, obviously, she shouldn't eat a ton, but she's a grown-up. She'll figure that out. As opposed to, like, before when she's like, can you get me a bag of peanut M&Ms? Or, like, I know she likes lemon drops, and so I get those. But I'm like, no, that's not a good plan. But this one, I'm like, this is a treat. She really likes it. It's a new thing. But, like, it's not fucking up her blood sugar.
Right.
Yeah, nuts are good. They make a lot of diabetic candies that are fine. If you're like me, I don't tend to worry about fat content. I worry about carb content. So I will make popcorn and put all the butter on it. Like, and real butter, real fucking butter. Like last night, I made a bag of microwave popcorn and then I poured half a stick of melted butter on it.
That's a lot of butter.
It was very tasty. So I do a lot of, now that I have to watch more for carbs, I'll substitute fat because there's some great stuff that's fat and you got to watch out because there's a lot that's fat and sugar, but you know, there's a lot of stuff, just good fat, put butter on it.
Yep.
Butter. What about you, mister? You don't believe in treats. You barely believe in eating.
What are you talking about?
I mean, you're really boring with food. You're like, I must consume this pill so that I will survive another day. You're whatever the opposite of a foodie is.
That's mostly true, yeah.
So I'm guessing treats as food isn't a concept for you.
No, that's, I mean, no. But usually if it's a treat, it's got sugar and or fat in it, for sure.
Because it's a donut.
Yeah, it's a donut, or it's a pie, or it's...
Pie!
Chocolate bar, or I mean, yeah.
And you, I'm guessing, are violently opposed to artificial sweeteners. I'm guessing you've murdered people who have offered them to you.
No, I aspartame gives me headaches, so it wouldn't matter if I was against it. I can't have it. I don't generally like the flavor of artificial sweeteners. There is a plant-based artificial sweetener that I use now. Like, I'll have a hot chocolate pretty much every morning, but I won't put sweetener in it because that would be too much. So there, I put an artificial sweetener in the hot chocolate I have just about every day.
Is it a monk fruit one?
We have that, but no.
It's not stevia or monk fruit?
No.
I don't know any others.
Ooh. It's called, I don't remember what it's called. I think it's called Just Like Sugar or something. I forget what it's made from. It's completely plant-based. It's not some kind of synthetic, you know, whatever.
You didn't time it well enough, because I like the idea that you're like, yeah, it's this plant-based sweetener. It's called Just Like Sugar. I'm like, oh yeah, sugar. I've heard of that one.
But we get these cans of condensed coconut milk. So I'll put that in a pot and some like cocoa powder, you know, not unsweetened cocoa powder. And then I'll put some of this stuff in there and I'll whisk it, you know, so it blends and everything. It's a pretty good hot chocolate. I used to make hot chocolate from a thinner coconut milk, not a condensed coconut milk, but a thinner coconut milk and the chocolate. And I would, how did I sweeten it? Oh, I remember. I would get a chocolate coconut milk. See? Because even though I didn't feel like the chocolate coconut milk was adequately chocolatey, it was adequately sweet. So I could put that in a mug, then put some more chocolate in it and heat it like in a microwave. And then I could use a fork or something to sort of whisk it until it blended. And then that was a pretty good hot chocolate, I remember. But this works too. I started doing it.
I mean, you're the one who got me onto the coconut milk ice cream.
Yeah,
which I specifically tried to thwart you with, and it's awesome.
I have integrated dairy back into my diet enough where I could probably just eat regular ice cream, and I have sometimes, but I just don't like it as well as I like coconut ice cream.
That stuff is good. I should get some again. I haven't had it in a while. You got to like coconut, because the people who are like, it doesn't even taste like coconut, it absolutely tastes
sure
like
it
coconut.
Does. Oh, yeah.
But I like coconut.
It does.
And for a lot of people who don't like coconut, they say it's a texture, and this doesn't have that at all.
I think if you can get, you know, say unsweetened shredded coconut and put it on things, and it if you don't mind coconut, it actually seems like a sweetener almost. Although it has sugar
in general,
content, I'm sure.
And fruit in general can be useful for this kind of thing. And it's, again, if we're talking diabetes, your body's going to process the sugar from just fruit better than the processed sugar.
Yeah, I was gonna say fruit, especially strawberries or berries in general, but I figured that was sugary, so maybe that wasn't a good idea.
And I did for a little while. I had a thing I was doing because something on the internet told me. Jell-O cups, but they make ones that are sugar-free. Mm. It's a little boring, but you also buy whipped topping, like that comes in like the spray can, and you spray it on, so it's like a little parfait looking thing or something. And that was not bad. I had that for a while. It was like 10 calories or something. Speaking of, you should try, if you have not, and if I've not talked to you about this, they make like ready whip spray thing or whatever, coconut milk version.
Oh yeah.
And it's tasty.
Yeah, it's very good.
Very tasty.
Yep, I've had that.
All right, then I won't tell you about it.
We have a lot of coconut now in the house. Lots and lots and lots of it. I mean, I'll bet, you know, there's this show called King Corn that talks about how much corn people eat without realizing they're eating so much corn. And one of the things they do in it is they have these guys give their hair to some lab to test it because, you know, what you eat and stuff stays in your hair. And they determined that one of the things that they must be consuming more than just about anything was corn, because they found this in their hair or whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'll bet if I had my hair tested, they'd find a lot of coconut.
So much coconut.
We just have a lot of coconut.
That's why he keeps the hat on. It looks like a coconut, like with the hair and stuff.
It's crazy.
Oh, okay, but now you have to shut up, because I forgot about something I needed to talk about, and we're almost done, and it's very important.
Oh, okay.
I watched another thing. The premiere of Lovecraft Country on HBO.
Oh, yeah. We haven't gotten to that yet.
Do it. It's wonderful.
I've heard that.
It's so faithful to the book. Oh. There are definitely things that are changed. A lot of them are, and you're the one who sort of has taught me to figure these ones out, things that they change because it works better that way on TV.
Yep. Yeah.
I think you first taught me that with the Dresden Files series. And there are definitely some of those. There are also some things they changed that I have no idea why they changed. but they have it. None of it so far has been critical. It's definitely still been the same sort of story. It's definitely the same feel. I loved it. I loved it so much. And the cast is unbelievable. Both the people I know, and there's some great people I know there, and the people I didn't know before that now I'm becoming fans of. I will say this, because it tripped up Trish. It's a show you got to pay attention to. Hmm. You got to watch the screen. Don't be doing other shit at the same time. Not that it's complicated, but there's just a lot going on. So, like, Trish was kind of messing on her tablet at first, and consequently, she was a little confused for part of it. So, you got to pay it, but it's so good. And much like the book, there's a vaguely episodic nature to the book, so I don't think it's too tricky to start watching while it's still coming out. Especially because it's so good. Oh, I loved it. So yeah, check that out. HBO, HBO Max, whatever. Lovecraft Country. Really good. Watch it. That's your goal. I just learned today the Wisconsin State Fair kind of did their state fair, but coronavirus safe. So it's two things. They did a bunch of the ag stuff and things online so you could see them. But they also had at the fairgrounds essentially a giant alleyway of all the food stands. And people drove their cars and had to pull up. It was essentially drive-through state fair food.
Iowa did that too.
Did they? Mm-hmm. Now you're telling me I should have gone there. Oh,
you would have gone there?
I love fair food, and I'll be in the air conditioning of my car. It would be awesome.
Oh, yeah. Iowa did do that. In fact, yeah. You could.
What are the things I hate about the state fair? The heat and the walking. What are the things I love about the state fair? The food. That was literally the food minus the heat and the walking.
Yeah, they you could go get food there. And I think they were doing things like with, you know, they were testing people and socially distancing for things like, I think they were actually showing animals and stuff.
Wisconsin wasn't doing.
I think they actually did some of that stuff because it's online. You can watch it. I couldn't tell.
The only actual competition they're doing this year is honey, and you can enter through October in Wisconsin. All the rest, they're not even having a competition, just sort of exhibition, and again, remotely.
I couldn't tell if what they were posting online was, because some of the stuff they were posting was old stuff, and I couldn't tell if some of the stuff was like from last year or if they were are doing stuff this year. But I think they are doing some things this year, and they did have actually even before the week of the fair was supposed to open or whatever, you could go to the fairgrounds and get some food there.
Drive through? Because that's how they're doing this. You stay in your car the whole time. It took for fucking ever. Apparently, because it was all just this one giant lane. So hours and hours and hours. But they sold like 212,000 cream puffs. And
I mean, I didn't really get any. I mean, because I wasn't going to do it. So I didn't even think about it.
The number of fried things I could have still lodged in my guts now. If you had just told me. I don't even know them all. I'll bet there were some deep fried things I hadn't even heard of. Probably deep frying panda toes or something. I don't know. I'll eat it once. Okay. If they clip the nails.
Okay, that's gross.
All right. I think that's it for this week. I have a plan coming up for the podcast.
Okay.
Kind of like a game show, a little. It's mostly for you, but I think it's good for the listeners too. I have some questions and some things I want answered. But what I want to do is talk about them on the podcast and then have everyone, including you, respond on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, where y'all should go and talk to us and about us and despite us all the time. If you want to house your local club on there, like, go ahead. It's in the comments, like, whatever. We're fine. We just want company. We just want people to visit.
Yeah.
All right. I guess that's it. Y'all should listen again next week. In the words of the great Lord Greg Davis, nighty night and bitey bye.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.